Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Jamie Gilliland, a serial entrepreneur, international speaker, and elite coach with over 15 years of diverse industry experience. Jamie's expertise lies in systems, automation, and implementation, making entrepreneurial visions come to life. As the founder and CEO of MySite, she's a mastermind in sales funnels and marketing automation. Jamie is also an Infusionsoft certified partner and a digital marketer certified partner with a master's degree from American Intercontinental University and a bachelor's in information technology from Hood and Mount St. Mary's. Jamie's academic foundation is solid. Beyond her business acumen, she's a dedicated mentor helping entrepreneurs crystallize their own message to millions to make the difference they want to see in their world. Whether you're looking to transform your business or seeking motivational insights, Jamie is the go-to expert. I'm asked to join us here today to share her story, plus talk about finding our right message and doing better marketing automations. Jamie, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Thanks, Daryl. I'm great. Actually, it's funny. I forgot to mention this to you before. I went to school with an Urbanski.
Really? Robin.
Yep. Years ago. It's not a common name.
No, it's not. When I lived in Toronto as a kid and Yellow Pages was still a thing, I remember grabbing the phone book, opening up to Urbanski, and we were the only ones. I think we were the only ones in all of Toronto. And I've met one other, Adam Urbanski, in my life. There's no relation to Adam Urbanski. And I was adopted into the name. So I don't, that's about as, but apparently it's popular in Poland.
Yep. My mother's maiden name was Kraszewski. So we've got some.
Hey, another ski. What?
Actually, my grandfather came over on the boat, and he and his six brothers, every one of the last names was spelled differently because it depended on who they hit. So one was Kary, SKY, there was an SKI, there was an SKIE, they were all different.
Yeah, whatever name they got coming through the border. So that's
exactly,
let's talk about that. So that's almost very entrepreneurial to travel across the ocean to embark on a new. So what happened? They came, did they start up businesses here or what? They came, they got a job. What was the vision?
One of my uncles became a college professor, but the rest of them were blue collar workers, worked in the coal mines up in Pennsylvania or the steel mills. So they were just regular, common, hardworking people.
And how did you get started in sales and marketing and business? Were your parents entrepreneurial? Is that when the bug started taking off? Or are you the first generation?
My stepdad, my mom was divorced when I was young. And my stepdad left a typewriter repair company and started his own. As a high school student, my summers were spent going back to all the high schools and cleaning out all the typewriters for the typing classes. When I grew up, we actually had those hard key typewriters, no computers. I guess you could say that was part of the bug. Although before that, in sales, I was the Girl Scout that always had to win selling cookies.
Oh,
so
I really?
Taking boxes to the shopping center and selling outside. I think I was top, I think every year. I can't remember anyone ever beating me. So my sales started as early as brownies, because I was selling cookies then too. So that's what, 7, 8 years old?
I love it. I love it. I'm trying to start my daughter early as well. She's 4, turning 5. And she actually has her own business now called Made by Malaya. Her name is Malaya. And I got a rock polisher, like a tumbler. Because I'm always trying to give my dad, like, do experiences with my daughter that will teach her long-term lessons, like gardening. I love doing, like, plant stuff, because you got to prepare, you got to plant, you got to nurture. There's time to sow, or the flowers and parasites. I just think it's a great, like life lesson teacher. But then I've got other things. So I got this rock polisher. Pardon?
I said that's basic entrepreneurship. You got to plant, you got to sow, you got to harvest, you got to watch for the parasites.
Right, 100%. And I got a rock tumbler because I wanted to show her the idea of taking like these ugly rocks and be like, these are your ideas, or this is you when you first start, because she's doing ballet and jujitsu and soccer. She's like in everything. And I wanted to show her that if you keep polishing something, you keep working on it, you keep letting it tumble, it becomes this beautiful thing eventually at the end. So I got this rock tumbler to have make gemstones. You start these big, ugly, jagged, rough rocks, and at the end you have these beautiful gemstones. And her and her mom just fell in love with this thing and these gemstones that it was producing. And I said, hey, we can make jewelry out of these. And I got them some jewelry making kits, like just the blanks that you glue them to. And they went to town and made all this jewelry, like necklaces for themselves. And I was talking to my wife saying, hey, her school, my daughter's school has an annual like fair. And I said, hey, maybe we should get a booth at the fair, call it Made by Malaya, and just to give her that experience. Why not? And then we talked about other things she could help make and figured out how to help her make like epoxy keychains, like the letters. We got like a cookie cutter thing with all the letters and epoxy, and got her making those with putting gemstones in them and colors and stuff. And it's all, but then we found the mall across the street did an event called Kidopreneur, which was like a farmer's market for kids. And we set up a table for her, and we had a little flyer, and I had her running out, go get them. And she ran over and be like, hi, come visit my booth Made by Malaya, where everything's made by me, Malaya. And she sold like $300 worth of knickknacks, like a jewelry, earrings, keychains, from 25 cents to $2 over a Saturday, Sunday weekend. And she's still getting orders now, like through the school as a Viber chat, like parents, like now they make candles, parents are making orders. I just think it's such a good thing for kids. So I love that. I love that.
We did the same. My stepson is 14. And 2 years ago, when he came to live with us full time, we started talking about baking, and he wanted to figure out how to bake brownies. So I gave him my recipe and he started baking brownies. Mm. And he walked through the neighborhood and knocked on doors and said, hey, these are the brownies I made. Would you like to order some?
Yeah, so I love
he built
that.
Called Tristan's Treats. He does brownies, cakes, he does pies, he does cookies. We have a local gas station that literally was putting his treats in there.
Window. For a little while. Yeah, I love that.
And said, hey, I want to put mine. She said, no, we're not promoting adult shit. Well,
it's okay. It's my podcast, so you can say what you want. What, George Carlton, shit, pick, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits. And he has got a whole stand up. He's like the seven words, these words, man. It's George Carlton, I think he has a stand up skit. Where he goes over the seven deadly words or something like that. We're good. We're good.
Wasn't he the one that used to smash watermelons?
Maybe. I didn't see that, but it wouldn't surprise me. So you started off basically developing your sales tycoon skills as a brownie.
I started early.
And then what?
And sold through the years. I decided I was going to become a chemical engineer. Then I was going to get my law degree and I was going to save the world. And then the first Commodore PET computer came out in my junior year of high school. Mm-hmm. And I started learning programming and went, this is cool. So I switched, ended up, as you heard, information technology for my bachelor's. And then I got my MBA with a concentration in marketing. So I tease if, oh, goodness, the vice president that claims he created the internet. What's his name? I can't remember now.
I'm not sure, but that's okay.
Anyway, if he invented the internet, I invented digital marketing because I did all of that prior to the internet. So that's fun. Oops, and that's a mosquito that's trying to bite me. So I've done all kinds of things, worked for large corporations, was in training departments, got out of sales for a little while. Then I went back into sales, was in sales in the early 90s, selling compact 286s, 386s. You're probably too young to remember the sewing box machine with the little green or orange screens. Sold all of those, was the top. There was one guy and I that competed every month as the top salesperson. And back in those days, early 90s, it was a man's world. So it was tough fighting up and becoming a top producer as a female. So that was cool.
That is very cool.
And one of the things that made me stand apart then, and I think I've taken with me ever since, is if somebody asked a question and I didn't know the answer, I felt my answer to them would be, that's a really good question. I'm going to have to find out the answer. But inside, I felt inadequate. So I would want to learn. So as a salesperson, and I was in Washington, D.C., I was selling to government contractors, EDC, all kinds of, INET was one. There were a whole bunch of government contractors. And so I went out and got service certified to be able to sell. So one of the funnest stories I had, I went in and was working on something and somebody said, this part of the machine is not working. And I don't remember what it was now. I said, do you have a screwdriver? And she looked at me and said, you're a salesperson. I said, yep. And I pulled the screwdriver out. I fixed what it was, put it back together. Got every deal with that company after that.
Love because it.
Our salesperson knows this much. Think about what the service department can do. Always striving to know more, which is what led me to automation. Getting excited about what other things can happen. There's the normal thing that everybody thinks about. I like to do the what ifs. What if we did this? What if we did this? And explore those different what ifs. And that's brought success to me and my companies, as well as all of our customers along the way.
I love that. So looking back, what were some of the biggest challenges in your business career?
One of my biggest challenges was growing too fast. When I started working with Infusionsoft, and I apologize, my voice is going. It's the end of the day here. I guess I've been talking too much today. When I started with Infusionsoft, they had been trying to recruit me for about a year. Matter of fact, I won one of their summer promotion contests. They were giving away a Camaro and all kinds of stuff. I didn't win the Camaro, but I did win Southwest Airline tickets and a trip, which was cool. Even though I wasn't a partner, I wasn't selling it. I had a regional web design company at that point and told them they were too expensive. My clients wouldn't pay it. So I kept ignoring them. And then I went to an event and one of their guys, Thomas Blackwell, was there talking and he was saying, you can do this and you can do this and you can do this. And in my head, I'm adding up MailChimp at $25, this at $25, this at $50, and realized I was using bubblegum and Band-Aids to hold together a whole bunch of stuff. And where Infusionsoft at the time was $399 a month, I was spending no more than $50 per software because that was mine.
Yep.
I don't spend more than $50 on software. But the combination of the different things, I was spending over $600 a month on what I could have done with one package that was completely integrated. Little did I know. So I started using Keep Infusionsoft. I'm so used to switching to Keep now.
Yeah. So, it'll always be Infusionsoft and Confusionsoft in my mind. It'll always be. My app is from 2012. It's so old. It's still hanging in there as an app.
There you go. Exactly. Mine too. I started in 2014.
Yeah.
So 2014 as a solo web designer, work at home mom. I had just gone through a whole bunch of trauma, had a brain tumor, lost my real estate company because it was 2007, whole bunch of stuff. So I had a web design company and I did $60,000 that year as a stay-at-home mom supporting my three young children.
Yep.
My first husband had passed away in 2009. So I was plugging along, started using Infusionsoft, and literally between November 2014 and November 2015, I grew the company to $60,000 a month. So literally 12x'd the company in 12 months. The problem, I was good at sales. I was selling the crap out of what I was doing, but I also put my reputation and my caring and focus for the client and my strategy into the sale. The problem was I didn't have the right systems in place to pass that through to the designers who were actually building the sites. I need bodies. I need web designers. Somebody's a web designer. They can build what I want. Made sense. Didn't work. So I ended up literally imploding the company. Let go of the 20 outsourced web designers and went back. Did some sales for a client of mine for a year. Focused on selling his stuff and building all of these sites. I was very honest with my clients and said, here's the deal. Some of them I refunded, some of them I gave discounts, but all of them I made good on so that they got what they were looking for.
Yep.
So that was the biggest lesson, is you can't just throw bodies. If you're building a company that has, let me see how I say this, because there are companies that are built, if you've got integrity, and you've got a purpose or a way of doing what you're doing, and if you're putting your name and your reputation into it, you've got to make sure that you can build that into the culture of your company, into becomes the DNA of what you're selling. It's not just a website, or it's not just a widget, or a coaching program. It's here's the pieces. This is what we're all about. These are the things that are important that we're selling, that we're focused on, that we're coaching on, and that we're covering all of these bases. The project, whatever, is not done until all of these things are checked off.
Checklists are amazing. Checklists are so amazing. I swear, if I didn't have a checklist, first, the things that my team do. Yeah. There's a great book called Checklist Manifesto. It talks about all great professions, from pilots to surgeons. They all work with checklists. They all have a checklist. I think that's really powerful. Can you speak? I'm sure some people are curious. What was some of the automation that allowed you to, what changed that allowed you to go from 60K per year to 60K per month? You're good.
I'm just on a, so my voice tastes better, sounds better, and it got stuck.
You're fine. You okay?
I'm good.
Okay.
Anyway, so the first thing that happened, I had a big list. I had over 6,000 people on my list, but I wasn't communicating with them regularly. The old out of sight, out of mind. Once I became consistent in saying, hey, this is what's going on in my world. This is what we're doing. These are specials we're doing. Have you thought about this? Have you tried this? Have you seen this strategy? When I started communicating with my list, all of a sudden they were like, oh, wow, yeah, we want to try that. Let's do that. Or Black Friday specials. That was the first thing I did, because I bought the software at the beginning of November 2014. As a web designer for small businesses back then, November and December were always the slowest months, the smallest month, because people had already spent their budgets. They were now focused on the holidays. They were talking of January, February. They could start doing whatever they were doing again. So I did a Black Friday special that was a no-brainer, and brought in five times what I had ever brought in November. So then I went, oh, this is pretty cool. Let's try a December special. So I did a December special and brought in five times what I did in December. And by then I went, there's something to this. There's keeping communication, being able to have the follow-up, have if somebody does something, if they click a button, if they purchase something, whatever, having that automated follow-up that took them to the next step on the journey that I designed for them, the path I wanted them to take. It's funny, you can lead a horse to water and you can make them drink when you already know what the path is. It's real easy to get them to drink. The conversions were amazing.
What would you recommend to people starting out or struggling with this?
The first thing I suggest to all of my customers is figuring out what that journey is supposed to look like. What do you want your customers to do? And the way I prefer to start it, if they've been in business, is we talk about every one of us has that favorite customer, that one that you wish you had 1,000 of. So I make them go back and look at how did they find you? What was their purpose they were looking for? What was the problem or solution they were looking for? Who followed up? What was the process? What were the actual emails or texts that were sent? Mm-hmm. And follow that whole and map it out. Then I have them go back, and everyone has that one client that you want to fire, that the one that when the phone rings, you put your head down. Oh God, not again. We've all had one of those in our career. If you're a business owner, hopefully you don't have them anymore, because you've defined who your ideal client is. And you're not desperate enough that you take clients just because they have cash.
Yeah.
But think about that one and then do the same thing. Where did they come from? Who did the follow-up? What was the expectation set all along? And you'll see the not so good client. You'll see where it falls off the rails when you compare the two tracks. And that helps to set what the right system is, the way you want to make sure everything follows. So once you've got that mapped out, then we start looking at what can be automated in that process. But you've developed the system.
I love that. I think that is gold right there. People may want to re-listen to all that, make sure they got those minor details and those questions that you have to answer, because I think that's fantastic. A lot of people rush into automation, and I've done this. If you automate something that's not proven, it's likely to not work. I just say that people don't realize how much gold is in their sent inbox, not their inbox, but the sent inbox folder, that you can just comb through that for gold. Just who, exactly what you said, best clients, what was said, what was the follow-up cadence? How could it be improved? All that sort of stuff. What sort of skills or behaviors do you believe are important for your clients to improve or develop?
Communication skills are number one. Sales is all about the conversation you're having, whether it's verbal or digital. Mm-hmm. So knowing and understanding how to communicate and when it's time to, I don't want to say push, because I don't like pushy sales, but when it's time to hold a space for them that you believe they can do whatever it is they're looking for. So a lot of times the objections that you're getting are really self-doubt on the part of the person you're talking with. So learning to know and understand and how to... My way of pushing is asking a lot of questions. So it's not, hey, you need to buy this or you're going to be a stupid idiot, right? I don't like that kind of sales.
Right.
But why were you looking for this? Why is that important to you? Why is that important to you? I call it my 9 levels of why. Usually it takes anywhere between 7 and 15, I think, is the most I've ever done. But if you keep asking why, if you become that intrepid 3-year-old, if you think about when your daughter was 3, you'd say something and she'd say, why? Yep. And you say, because I said so. Why? Because I'm the dad. Why? So you want to become that 3-year-old and start asking those whys, and you'll get to a point. I had a client say to me once, Jamie, you're the only person that has ever made me cry. I said, really? And she said, yep. And I thank you for it, because when you get to that why that is emotional, they're going to decide every time, I don't care what the price is. I don't care what the time frame is. It solves the problem that's been keeping me awake at night, and I'm going to figure out how in the hell I'm going to solve it.
I love that. I love that. I feel bad now. I'm always like three layers deep, like spin selling, right? Situation, implication, situation, problem, implication, needs. So I'm always like, get 3 or 4 layers deep, but you're like, get 9 levels of why. Get to 7 to 15 layers. I love that. Exactly. I love that. Yeah. So what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see your clients and other entrepreneurs making in general?
Giving up too soon. 3 feet from, if you know that story.
Yeah.
Sharon Lecter has been a client of ours. And I love that story. So many people give up right before they're about to hit the chaos, the challenges. I have one client who I love. He says, when stuff gets really crappy and I know I'm about to hit the rock bottom, I know that's the greatest thing in the world, because there's only going up, and that's when everything hits the way you want it. So instead of putting your head in the sand and say, why me? Say, why not me? What's the next step? What do I need to do?
I love that. I got 2 favorite. I'm like big into grit and perseverance. And one of them is, do it until it becomes dull and then keep going until it's beautiful. And my other one, perseverance, is perseverance is all the hard work you do when you're already sick and tired from all the hard work you just finished doing. I love that. Yeah. What other mistakes are they making?
Doing it all, not delegating or not building systems. It's so many times, and I did this myself for years, when I would want to delegate to somebody, but I'd have to stop and teach them in my mind, because I was so busy, as Gerber says, I would say, that's fine. I'll just do it myself. I can do it faster. Maybe that one time you can do it faster, but if you keep doing it, it would take less time to train someone else and let them do it. And you do what you're genius at, mm-hmm. what your specialty is. Mm-hmm. See, so many of the clients I meet have something that they're amazing at. They're an accountant, they're a coach, they're a salesperson, they're a whatever. And they look at what the corporation is doing and what they're being paid, how much the corporation is charging for their time. And they say, screw that. I can go out and make $300 an hour on my own. I'm starting my own business. They do, but they forget that there were 25 people around them who were doing the marketing, doing the lead gen, doing answering the phone, taking out the trash. And all of a sudden, they're wearing all of those hats and they're drowning. Instead of Tim Ferriss's 4-hour work week, they're getting what Jamie says is the 4-hour sleep week.
That's right.
Because they're worrying.
That's so very well said. I agree that. I'm a huge fan. I think that's great. So they need to take the time to plan, right? That's a huge reason why they say people don't fail, systems do. Michael Gerber is actually scheduled to be on our show in an upcoming episode. So stay tuned, folks. But that book is a Bible to a lot of people, because it really helps. It really coined the term working on your business versus in it. And I think that's it. When you look at business in the an entrepreneur in the dictionary, it's a person who organizes a business or business ventures, taking on more risk than anyone else. But the idea is, the key term is who organizes. What it doesn't say is the person who turns the lights on, collects the orders, fulfills the product, cleans the toilets at night. It doesn't say that. It says a person who organizes a business and business or business ventures. And I think
Michael, yes, he's been a client of ours since 2016. My husband does a lot of writing for Mike. Able to be one of the five speakers at his 85th birthday party. What? Funny story, when he wrote the newest, which is Beyond Behemoth, which is his latest book, he sent it. I was heading out to Carlsbad for an event with him, and he sent me the manuscript and said, read the book, read the manuscript. I'm like, no, Chris is the editor. I'm the systems. He's the copywriter editor, my husband. He's read the couple of words book. I said, all right. So I read it on the plane. I got there. I said, all right, there was a comma missing here. There was a misspelling here. Did you read the acknowledgments? I said, no, I didn't read the acknowledgments. Who reads the acknowledgments? He said, read the effing acknowledgement. I'm like, okay, let's see if I can find it. So I started reading the acknowledgments. Here they are. Oops. And let's see. There it is. So I read the acknowledgments.
And there you are.
Jamie Gilliland.
To Jamie, can you read it? Read it for us. Read it for us. Or I'll read it. Hold it up and I'll read it if you want. To Jamie Gilliland. Wow, such a glad and rewarding gift you. Oh, I can't see by the spine.
Such a glad and rewarding gift you've become with love and a strong shoulder, never allowing anything to drop, even when there was more to carry than an ordinary person could. You are our love, our friend, our outreach, invincible. So anyway, I get
what?
There.
That's amazing.
Tears coming down my face. Oh, why didn't you just tell me to read the freaking acknowledgments? It was pretty funny. He's like, you read the book anyway.
That's amazing. What a great little story there. So what are some of the habits that you feel have helped you to befriend someone like Michael, to consistently deliver for him, for your other clients, to achieve your own success? What are some of the habits that you feel have been mission critical over all these years?
Never giving up, never giving in, and always holding a place for where I want to be or where they want to be. I think attitude makes the difference in everything, personal, business, relationships. If you go in expecting the worst, that's going to happen. If you go best, that's exactly what's going to happen. It might take a while to get there, but it'll happen. Mm-hmm. So I think it's holding the attitude of, this is possible. This is exciting to me. And this is where I have a friend that's into woo-woo, as my first husband always said. And her thing is, when you have worries, things that are bothering you, her answer is, that's not how the end of my movie. That's not the end of my story. This is how my movie works. You're the director of your own. Mm. And you get to decide how it ends. You're not stuck with what others put into your head.
Yeah, I really believe that. I forget the title. I tracked it down. It was like pre-Think and Grow Rich. Oh, I got to find it. Anyways, this guy talks about how there's like a vegetable, ephemeral substance that the universe is made out of. The universe is made out of a thinking stuff.
Waddles.
Yeah, what?
Stuff and the thinking stuff. I've got him on my shelf. Here he is. The Wisdom of Waddles. Yeah. Of course, it's under 16 others.
You know the title?
It's The Science of Getting Rich.
The Science of Getting Rich is one, but this is even pre that. This is even before that. The Wisdom of Wallace Wittles The science getting rich. The science. What? Let me see. What does it say? The science of getting rich. Science of getting rich has that for sure. Being great. Science of being well. There's another one. It is like from the 1800s or 1906. It is so old. I got to find it and look it up. I wish I had. I know I have it in Google Drive. I don't want to make everybody listen to the podcast wait for me to search it. I'll put it in the show notes. But it talks about that there is this thinking stuff. And it's like thinking. It's like the science of getting rich. And there really is, like, things have to become a thought before they become an action. I worked with the guru of manifestation from the movie The Secret, John Assaraf. I really think it's more think and grow rich, where that is one auto-suggestion is one of 13 principles or so. It's not just, I think in some ways people get shot in the foot where it's not like action makes it real, but you have to believe in it. I think the way best way to look at this, at least my opinion, is if you're running a marathon, if your mind gives up, your body will not carry you through to the finish line. Exactly. But your mind can carry a broken body across the finish line. And this is the importance of mindset and mental fortitude. And it's a really good point. I think it's a great point that you have to be able to see through. Listen, we're all going to die. Like, spoiler alert, everyone listening to this is going to die eventually. Like, we all have hopes of AI and immortality, medical breakthroughs. But as far as we know up until now, that's never occurred. Even the Sumerian kings list, they still only lived a couple tens of thousands of years. And then they died too. So even the supposed Sumeria, the first civilization we know of, their kings list, even they only lived for 10,000, 15,000, 25,000 years, and then they died. So we're all going to die eventually. And so the real, like you talk about, like, it's really not that bad. It's how you react to it. It's how you respond to it. Anything can be used as fuel. Pain in your life can be turned around and used as motivation and fuel, right? The opportunities are in the difficulty. That's where the innovation comes through.
Talking about The Secret, Laurel Langmire has also been a client of mine, and she was one of the secret people too. And Laurel used to talk about the secret couch people. I'm like, what the hell are the secret couch people? She's the people that think they can sit on their couch and think, I want a Maserati and it's going to fall. She's like, you can't be the secret couch person. You got to have the vision, but you've got to take action to get there.
Yeah.
Just sitting on the couch and hoping is not an action plan.
100%. You have to make it real. You have to bring it into the world somehow. There has to be, you can meditate on it all you want and maybe things will connect, but at some point you still have to put the wheels in motion and do everything that you can do in a day to make it real, to make it happen. Yeah.
Meet the right people. You got to find the right place. Waddles talks about, it makes no sense to plant a salmon farm in Florida. There are no salmon.
Yeah, you have to have, it has to be rooted in reality. You might want to be an NBA star, but if you were born as a midget, vertically challenged, that may be a huge obstacle, right? And it's just the reality. It's just the reality of the world. I had 10 assistants help me go through all the academic literature to look up business success. What were the key critical success factors for small and medium-sized businesses? And we found 8 critical success factors. They were self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy and skills, money management, business operations, and business intelligence. Those were the big umbrella categories that hundreds and thousands of studies that we looked at that had looked at factors affecting business success for small, those were the 8 umbrella topics. And within them, there's a bunch of subcategories. And one of the things that, like, for example, you already hinted to this, but one of the things that for marketing strategy, because everybody wants more marketing. They did. It was intense networking and advertising. It was intense. And that was something I feel like, and when I started, I think about my highest performing clients, they have intense joint venture strategies. I have a friend, he's doing a summit. He has 55 experts on his summit, and it's like a 3-day thing, 4-day thing. That is intense. That is an intense amount of activity. I have clients that their staff are calling 300 people per day. Between outbound calls and social media outreach, 300 calls per day. So it's intense. That's the thing. It's, you really have to, you're not going to sit there, click your heels and wish your way into something, some other way. I know a guy, he's got 400,000 organic views of his website and they're producing like 10 SEO articles a day. And he's doing an audit. He's paying different professionals to audit his site. every month when they're dialing it all in. This is not something that's just click my heels and away we go and yay. It's just, there really has to be action behind it. But in my life, I'm sorry, I know I'm on a soapbox here, but in my life, I, especially when I had my martial arts school, I have seen people lose fights before they even started because mentally they gave up. They look at the other opponent and they crumble. And that is exactly why I feel like it's here, like what we're talking about here. You have to have the right mindset. You have to have the ability to turn adversity into an opportunity. And you have to acknowledge that as long as you're not dead, you're still in this. And that's really what it comes down to at the end of the day. If you're not dead, you said this at the beginning, every day above ground, right? Above the dirt is a good one. This is our playground. And even if, I'm going to get off my soapbox a second, even if we do achieve immortality, or even if you just believe that we have an immortal soul, what do you feel would be trophies that this immortal being, whether it was a human that achieved immortality or your immortal soul, what would be the trophies it would put on the mantle of its fireplace? Would it be the times that you got kicked and you gave up? Would it be the times that you did shady things to somebody else in the deal because you were worried about paying your bills versus giving them the best value? Or would it be when you were the best person and what you did touched lives of everybody you interacted with? What about turning around what seemed like the darkest hours in your life? These would be the trophies that it would put up on its mantle. And that's my soapbox seminar and 3-minute rant.
No, I absolutely love it. And it's important, and it goes back to my never giving up, not only in business, not only in relationships, but your health. So you notice my hands shaking. I mentioned earlier, I had a brain tumor when I was just turned 40. And I was told I only had a 20% chance of surviving the brain tumor. So most people go into woe is me, and my first husband did. Woe is me, why is this affecting me? I went into, okay, how do I solve this? What do I need to do? Matter of fact, I told the doc, what's my options? They said, you can take the next 6 months and enjoy it with your children. My daughter was 9. My twins were 5 at the time. And I said, nope, that doesn't work. What's the next one? They said, there's this surgery, but you'll probably die on the table. It's only a 20% chance of survival. I said, nope, that doesn't work. What else you got? And they said, that's it. I said, nope, I want option C. And the doctor looked at me and said, there is no option C. I said, sure there is. You do the surgery, I survive, and I see my kids grow up and get married. My first son got married this March. So
congratulations. That's so fantastic.
So that's what got me through that. I had many other things. I've had a dog bite that ended up in a bacterial infection. I had a car accident that shattered my wrist. I've overcome all of them. And now I'm fighting this Parkinson's like tremor. And it's been about a year. But I was talking to someone recently and said, what's different about me? And they said, the fact that you never give up, you never give in. So I know, even though the doctors are flummoxed, they're sending me to Mayo Clinic because they're evidently the medical mystery people, because no one else can figure it out. But even though they don't know what's going on, I know I'm going to beat it. Right. I know just one more step in the story of my life.
That's right.
And that's how I have to look at it.
Yep. 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 And life, our history is full of people who did things no one thought possible. Before anybody ran a 3-minute mile, nobody thought it was possible. They thought that we have achieved the limit of how fast a human could run. And then somebody beat the 3-minute mile or 4-minute mile it was. And then once it was proven possible, a bunch of other people did it.
Exactly. Within the year, others beat it.
Yeah. So what we need are more people like you willing to push the odds, that don't just accept what they're told, that find a way. Jamie, this has been such a great and powerful interview. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
Probably, but I can't think of it.
For as a tidbit, I figured out the name of the book. It was Every Man a Winner by Charles Edward Popplestone. This was published in 1930. 36, and it was partially inspiration for Think and Grow Rich. It is maybe like an earlier version, different author. Every Man a Winner. We can talk after the interview. I'll send you a copy. It's but that's just as a tidbit. It was an open loop that maybe I shouldn't have closed because people would go, where are the show notes? But it's at, it's, I think it's out of copyright. So I'll still put a link to it for people that want to check out the show notes. Yeah.
Put the link in there.
I will. Woo-hoo! I will. Jamie, if people are interested, they want to learn more. You've obviously accomplished a ton. You've worked with some big names. Your track record speaks for itself. If they want to know more, should they just visit Coach Jamie G, CoachJamieG as in green.com?
That would be a great place, or they can go to meetwithjamieg.com and schedule a half an hour session with me.
Ooh, so go to meetwithjamieg, JamieG.com. Go schedule that 30 minutes. Show her what you got. Figure out how to fix it. What you do, you don't know what you don't know. Jamie, thank you so much for coming and joining us. I know you've got your own following, your own family, your own audience, your own clients to be taken care of. Thank you for taking some time out of your busy schedule to share with my audience and me so we can all do a little bit better.
No problem. Thanks, Daryl. Thanks for what you're doing. This was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. I'll have to have you back sometime in the future.
Count on it.